They can trust government systems. We test them every day. This was a very unfortunate mistake.
Questions and actions following a false missile alert. It's Monday, January 16th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a new Chinese car for America. More female turtles in Australia. Fitness trends for 2018. Quieter airplanes in the sky. It's all on today's VOA Asia. No matter where you live in the world, for most of us, we have never known life without at least a remote possibility of a missile or nuclear strike. Preparing for such a cataclysmic event isn't on our minds most of the time, but increased tensions with North Korea over the past year, amid missile and nuclear tests, along with some searing rhetoric, have brought the possibility of that threat closer to reality. And for several minutes Saturday in the Pacific U.S. state of Hawaii, a warning of an imminent ballistic missile strike caused real panic as people had little idea what to do or where to go in a precious few minutes. A Hawaii State Emergency Management Agency spokesman said human error and a lack of adequate safeguards led to that false missile alert, which went uncorrected for 38 minutes. State Governor David Ige said the alert was sent out during an employee shift change by a push of a button and that there was no automated process to get the word out that it was a false alarm. He apologized and said steps are being taken to make sure it doesn't happen again. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, in an appearance on Fox News Sunday's program, urged the public not to lose confidence in such early warning systems.
So I would hate for anybody not to abide by alert and warnings coming from government systems. They can trust government systems. We test them every day. This was a very unfortunate mistake, but these alerts are vital. Seconds and minutes can save lives.
The Federal Communications Commission has jurisdiction over such wireless alerts. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai called the false alarm unacceptable, causing a wave of panic. He said such mistakes undermine public confidence in the alerting system and reduce their effectiveness. Ralph Kosa is president of the Hawaii-based Pacific Forum, a security think tank, and he tells VOA's Victor Beatty such mishaps cannot be allowed to happen.
It's unfathomable to me that somebody could hit a button and, you know, something didn't pop up and say, are you sure you want to send off an alert? You try to delete a message in an email and they ask you if you really want to delete it. It's quite remarkable that our system didn't have any type of precaution built into it.
I know you were on travel, but what have you heard about what happened?
My wife, who was home, when she got the alert as she was out walking, she headed back to home, but she did not panic because while she got this email alert, the sirens that are supposed to warn us were not going off. So her initial thought was this is probably a hack or a mistake. But just to be safe, she headed to the basement of our condo with the other neighbors, and they just sat there and waited. The fact that it took 38 minutes for the state to correct the mistake was really inexcusable. So I don't think there was, at least in my family, there wasn't panic, but there certainly was anxiety, and it should have been addressed much quicker.
Were problems known beforehand about such a potential problem?
Obviously not. In fact, we weren't even aware that there was this email alerting system. All the people in Hawaii knew, as far as I know, was that there was a siren that would go off, similar to the siren that go off for a tsunami warning, but with a different modulation so that we would know it was an air raid as opposed to a tsunami warning. But as I said, those sirens never sounded, which caused at least some people to assume that this must have been a mistake.
Ralph, are residents of Hawaii on edge with regard to a possible North Korean missile attack?
For the most part, no. When I do my speeches and all, I tell people there's a less than 1% chance. Right now, there's no indication that the North Koreans are even capable of firing a missile with any kind of accuracy with a warhead that would survive reentry. I think most people here understand that, but certainly something like this that, you know, says this is not a drill certainly gets people's attention and will probably make them more nervous in the future.
Hawaii, home to the Pacific Command, the Navy's Pacific Fleet, and other military bases, revived monthly testing of nuclear attack sirens in November amid tensions with North Korea. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. South Korea engagement strategy requires daunting diplomacy. Myanmar says first camp for Rohingya will be ready next week. Indonesia cultivates more outward-facing foreign policy. Vietnam seeks upper hand on dissent with rules on foreign internet services. Two Koreas hold Winter Olympic talks. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, and we also invite you to stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Chinese automaker GAC Motors says it's on track to enter the U.S. market in the fourth quarter of next year. Company officials made the statement Monday as they introduced two models at the North American International Auto Show in Detroit that likely will come to the United States. At a packed press conference, GAC showed off a concept gullwing compact electric SUV called the Enverge that one day could be produced. The automobile maker says it will go over 370 miles on a single charge. Also unveiled was the GA4 midsize sedan that will go on sale in China later this month. GAC sold just over 500,000 automobiles in China last year. That's up 37% from 2016. The company says it is negotiating with partner Fiat Chrysler about possible distribution of vehicles, and it has already a research center in Silicon Valley that's working on another one in Detroit as well as a Los Angeles design center. A spokeswoman says the company's first vehicle in the United States will be the GS8, an SUV. It showed a video of seven different models during its presentation. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with David E. Cole. Dr. Cole is a well-known and respected authority on automotive industry trends. The two spoke as Cole was where one expected that he would be.
Well, I'm right now at the GAC Motor booth at the Detroit Auto Show Press Days, the International Auto Show Press Days. And they just had a press conference a little while ago talking about their products and what they plan to do. And it's a little different now from a few years back when we had a number of Chinese manufacturers bring cars into the basement of Cobo Hall. But things are very different. We're seeing much more investment in the U.S. marketplace. For example, the steering division of General Motors is now Nexteer, owned by a Chinese company. We're seeing a number of vehicles. For example, I think the Buick Envision is actually assembled in China and shipped here. So the merging of the Chinese and the U.S. industry is really underway. And when you consider that the China industry is about, well, not quite yet, but close to twice the size of the domestic industry, it tells you China is a really big deal.
There have always been questions about the quality of the automobiles that the Chinese make. Where does that stand?
Well, you really have sort of two types of Chinese vehicles. You have sort of the pure Chinese, and you have those that are done jointly with somebody else, the Volkswagen, the General Motors. Now you have, for example, Volvo was owned by a Chinese company, and kind of they're all hybrids. And what we have seen, and I think we will continue to see, is increased execution on the products that they're building. And as that occurs, it really tells you that we are in a globally integrated world where the boundaries are disappearing everywhere. Many years ago, we had a conference, our annual management briefing conference. We used the title, A World of Vanishing Boundaries. And it is happening today big time in terms of technology, engineering disciplines. The global boundaries are disappearing. And that's the reality of the future that we're looking to.
But what about the quality of the Chinese-made vehicles?
I would say that initially they were not up to what most people would expect here. I can't attest to some of the new ones that are here, but from every indication, they're becoming much, much better quality. And my guess is that as we look to the future, quality differences will probably disappear.
How is this being met by the U.S. auto industry?
Well, a combination of ways. One, obviously, tremendous emphasis on technology, for example, and particularly things like autonomous vehicle technology, advanced powertrain technology, materials, and so on. Another is partnering across the world, working in all of these emerging markets so that you're not just looking at a competitor, but a partner. And, of course, when you think about Buick as an example, they sell about three times as many vehicles in China as they sell here. And that tells you we're in a brave new world. And it means that the last thing that you should do is sort of sit on your hands and celebrate the past. You've got to be innovative. You've got to be moving forward, partnering. And it's a different world.
From a business sense, is there any worry among the U.S. automakers, which have been fighting off foreign competition for a long time now?
I don't think so. If you're not good at what you do, you're going to have a problem no matter where you operate in the world. So I think it's driving the industry to a higher level of excellence. We're sort of in an innovative hurricane here, is that if you decide to sit out for a while, you're going to have a real problem. I don't care whether you're Chinese, American, German, or Japanese, Korean. This is the world of today, and if you decide that you're going to go back to what you used to do, you're not going to be around very long.
When do you think these Chinese vehicles, maybe in particular the one you're looking at, the GAC vehicle, is going to be available in the United States?
I don't know if that's really defined yet. I think they're looking at it. They look at the marketplace. Is there an appropriate niche in the marketplace? Do they have an appropriate selling strategy, dealer strategy? Is it going to be something like Tesla where they skip the dealers? Or are they going to work with existing dealers with the brand? That's a work in progress.
The name of the Chinese vehicle is something that is under consideration by the Chinese manufacturer. Can you tell us about that?
You mean the Trump?
Yes.
We'll see. I mean, I think obviously anything that is shown here is aimed at sort of raising the issue a little bit, get people talking. But it'll be fascinating, particularly with the criticism that the president has. Head of China and other vehicles. It just adds to the drama. In fact, I get quite a few talks on the auto industry and its future. And one of the things that I tell people is that there's another factor, the Trump impact, that is going to be a big deal.
David E. Cole is chairman and co-founder of Auto Harvest Foundation. He joins us from the biggest and the best auto show in the world, the Detroit Auto Show at the Cobo Arena in Detroit. David, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you. All the best.
The vehicles produced by the Chinese company are named Trump Chi. Reports say the company is discussing the possibility of selling the car in the United States under a different name. Happening now in Asia, delegations from the two Koreas met Monday to hammer out details about the North sending a troop of artistic performers to next month's Winter Olympics in the South. Members of the North's famed all-female Moranbong music band are reported to have been hand-picked by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always happy when you're with us and glad you've joined us for this Tuesday edition of VOA Asia. Researchers say climate change is responsible for the vast majority of green sea turtles in the northern Great Barrier Reef off of Australia being female. The scientists from the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration say the temperature at which turtle eggs incubate determines the sex of hatchlings. And as Phil Mercer reports from Sydney, the scientists warn that warmer conditions are creating a dangerous gender imbalance.
Almost the entire green turtle population in parts of the northern Great Barrier Reef in Australia is now female. A study of about 200,000 animals in the reef's northern waters found them to be overwhelmingly female. The research was published in the journal Current Biology. There are concerns that the future of the endangered reptile is increasingly precarious. In the Southern Barrier Reef, where conditions are cooler, about two-thirds are female. Researchers say that while they hope for some milder years to produce more males, They expect temperatures to continue to rise. One possible solution to the gender imbalance is to put up tents over beaches where turtles nest to give them shade. Dr. Colin Limpus, Queensland chief scientist, says that cloud seeding is another option.
There is consideration being given to having artificial rain. It's being considered primarily for how can we get the turtles nesting successfully. At the same time, it's going to cool the sand and should shift the sex ratio towards an increase in males.
The green turtle is one of the largest sea turtles and the only herbivore among the different species. They're named for the greenish colour of their cartilage and fat, not their shells. They're classified as endangered and are threatened by habitat loss, over-harvesting of their eggs and the hunting of adults. The Great Barrier Reef stretches for 2,300 kilometres down Australia's northeast coast. It's home to a spectacular range of wildlife, including more than 130 species of sharks, 500 types of worms, and 1,600 varieties of fish. The reef faces a range of threats, from the runoff of pesticides and soils from farms and warmer ocean temperatures that have caused the mass bleaching of the coral in the past 2 years. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. 75 people were injured when the mezzanine of the Jakarta, Indonesia's stock exchange collapsed into the lobby, trapping people under slabs of concrete. Dozens of university students were visiting the stock exchange at the time, many of them accounting students visiting Jakarta from the island of Sumatra. You'll find top stories and great features on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Officials in the Philippines' Albay province say lava continued to flow down the slopes of the Mayon volcano late Monday as the eruption prompted evacuations from nearby villages. Molten rocks and lava in the Mayon's crater lit the night sky for a second night Monday, sending thousands of residents into evacuation shelters. Disaster response officials said more than 14,700 people have been moved from high-risk areas in three cities and four towns in an ongoing evacuation. Mayon is the Philippines' most active volcano. It is located in a coconut-growing district about 340 kilometers southeast of Manila. Officials at the Philippines Institute of Volcanology and Seismology say three eruptions since Saturday have spewed ash into nearby villages. Experts fear a major eruption could trigger bigger flows, superheated gas, and volcanic debris that race down the slopes at high speeds, incinerating or vaporizing everything in their path. More extensive explosions of ash could drift toward nearby towns and cities. With its near-perfect cone, Mayon is popular with climbers and tourists, but it has erupted about 50 times in the last 500 years, sometimes violently. This news alert from VOA Asia. China says it welcomes all outside help cleaning up after an Iranian tanker sank in the East China Sea, spreading oil over many square kilometers. It had collided with a Chinese vessel. Only three bodies from the Iranian tanker's crew were recovered before it sank. This and other stories online at VOA 60. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, only one in three U.S. children are active every day, and less than 5% of U.S. adults exercise at least 30 minutes every day. But VOA's Kevin Enix reports that it's not stopping these fitness entrepreneurs from showing off their wares.
Maybe working out on a trampoline is your thing, or maybe your balance is good enough to slackline, or good old Zumba. Whatever your exercise of choice may be, you will find it here at the California Fitness Expo. Organizers say there's something here for everyone.
And what we do is we bring together all these different elements of fitness. So on one angle, you might see the bodybuilders and the physique sports. Then you turn around, you see the group exercise classes. You'll have Spartan race obstacle courses. You'll have CrossFit, calisthenics, all different types of people who have a fitness lifestyle all in one place at one time.
It's not just exercise equipment or classes. The expo shows off all kinds of ways to get you moving. Everything from a rousing game of dodgeball to new ways to lift some heavy metal. Also on display, healthy eating and ways to look good while you're working out. Trend watchers say what constitutes fitness and how Americans get fit is changing.
Bodybuilding and CrossFit and getting strong has become mainstream in America. It wasn't really 5 years ago. And now you see everybody and their brother in here, and they've all got some muscle going on and some arm sleeve tattoos, and that's where the culture is right now.
It may be in the mainstream, but being fit is still definitely a U.S. subculture. Because the Centers for Disease Control says nearly 35% of U.S. men and 40% of U.S. women are obese, and that number keeps rising. And only about 5% of all U.S. adults are active at least 30 minutes a day. What that says is that all the cool swag, classes, or devices in the world are not getting nearly enough people off the couch. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
As electric-powered cars are rapidly gaining popularity, the last frontier in private transportation is also opening up to alternative eco-friendly power. Thanks to advances in battery and electric motor technology, several manufacturers are experimenting with light planes that are quiet, easy to maintain, and cheap to fly. VOA's George Pudich is fully charged to tell us more.
This is the sound of a small gasoline-powered airplane taking off. Now listen to a plane with electric motor. Gasoline-powered planes are noisy and expensive to keep, and they emit toxic fumes. Electric planes are quieter, cheaper to run, have zero emissions, and they are safer.
If you look at the safety you can build into, let's say, an electric motor, the reliability of that motor is many, many times more reliable than what we have in a traditional internal combustion engine.
Their only technical disadvantage is their short range, but with better batteries, that will change too. The most famous electric plane, Solar Impulse 2, equipped with solar cells, circumnavigated the world. NASA has been experimenting with electric propulsion too. Commercial companies are already showcasing their electric planes at air shows. German manufacturer Siemens has a lightweight two-seater that can even tow gliders. Alfa Electro, manufactured by Slovenian company Pipistrel, has an onboard computer that can predict malfunction and isolate a faulty battery cell.
The processing time of artificial intelligence right now is getting such, and the redundancy that can be built in, that we can provide very, very safe vehicles that are simple to operate and extremely reliable.
Recharging batteries typically takes between 45 minutes and 2 hours, and the flight time is about half an hour, which for now makes electric planes suitable only for training. However, there's one more obstacle, the same one that plagues self-driving vehicles, the lack of regulations. General Aviation Manufacturers Association is working hard to agree on standards covering electric-powered planes.
This will be an internationally accepted standards for certification of these vehicles, and that does a tremendous amount to be able to free up entrepreneurship and companies that want to be able to develop this in one country and be able to have their designs certified and validated all over the planet.
Experts say small electric-powered planes could be in commercial production within 5 years. George Pudich, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We say hello to everyone who's listening in the Philippines on Falcon Radio at Adamson University. Thanks for joining us today. We also send out our thanks to Director Tracy Carter, Jonah Cummings, our engineer, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead.